taste of fear. Yeah, it's written on my lips. Sipping on a cold one.
All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Me 3.
It's basically where we're just going to talk about what we did over this week, over the past couple of weeks, and talk about some of the things that we enjoyed, some of the things that we watched, some of the things that we read.
Yeah. As always, I'm Zach.
And I'm Stuart. And thanks for listening. We do appreciate you guys coming out here. I know there's plenty of podcasts out there.
Yes.
In the world. And the definitely. Yeah, Potosphere. Not to be confused with Harry Potter.
Oh, no. Or Pottersphere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we do appreciate you coming and listening to us ramble. And I'm glad that we're here to entertain you.
Yeah. So, did you want to go first, or?
Sure, yeah. Over this weekend, I actually went and saw a movie.
Which one?
Yeah, I saw The Quiet Place.
Ooh.
Yeah. Have you heard about that?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Okay.
I've seen all the memes, too, online of John Krasinski, like, looking at the camera, and it's like, the man that has spent his entire career quietly looking at the camera.
Yeah. I did not know that there were memes out there. I had heard about this movie. I didn't really like dive too deep into it because I do enjoy going to movies kind of blind.
Yeah.
With as least spoilers as possible.
Yeah, my wife's the same way.
Yeah.
She hates trailers.
Yeah, and that's the thing is like even trailers now will spoil a lot of things for you. And it's kind of funny because I'm talking about how I hate spoilers, and now I'm not going to get into many spoilers, but I will be talking about some things that were, like, in the previews and things like that.
So spoilers for The Quiet Place.
Not super spoilers, but a little spoilers. One, I didn't know that it was an alien flick. So...
Oh, that's a pretty big spoiler.
No, it shows it in the...
Yeah. Oh, I just assumed it was, like, monsters or some sort.
Yeah, monsters, aliens sort of deal.
Okay.
Yeah. They don't really get into the lore of the creature, like, what happened beforehand. This is all, like, after the post-apocalyptic stuff.
So it's
happened.
Like the road meets Cloverfield? Is that what you...
Kind of, yeah. Kind of.
With some Stranger Things thrown in?
With some Stranger Things, yeah. Mm. Because the main cast is a family.
Okay.
And there are kid actors in there, and the kid actors are about 50% of the screen time, and they're good. I will say, so I went and saw this movie in North DeKalb, and if you're not from Atlanta, North DeKalb is one of the lower-end theaters, per se.
Yeah, I saw Tusk there.
Yeah. Oh, you saw Tusk there?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
We saw it at, like, the, like, 8:30 a.m. showing, and we were the only people in the theater.
Oh,
and
wow.
I had no idea that that mall was, like, two stores. And then
everything
else is just shut down.
Yeah, which is interesting. Apparently, they're going to knock it down and make a Costco.
So where's Challengers going to move to then?
I don't know. I didn't even know that there was a game store. So Challenger is a game store in the mall. And I had no idea. So I got there a little early. And I was walking around the mall. And again, there's only like three shops in the mall.
Yeah.
Pretty much either the space is abandoned for rent or just has a bunch of junk in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was walking around and I thought I saw a Challenger, and I thought it was going to be an arcade, like an old arcade, because you hardly ever see those anymore.
Yeah.
With cabinets and things along those lines. But when I got in there, it was actually a game store, and I didn't even know that. I've been telling everybody that there were no actual game stores within the perimeter, and I was wrong.
It's not one that I like to go to, because after we saw Tusk, it was right when 5th edition was coming out. 5th edition of D&D was coming out. And I went in there to see if they had one of the core books. Because, you know, they released the core books, like, in a month apart.
Yeah.
And some stores had gotten them early. And mm-hmm. so I was just curious as to whether or not they had gotten, like, the Monster Manual or the DM Guide or one of those.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the guy working there was just really awkward or if...
Who was working there? Was it the owner?
I have no idea. Because I've only been in there once, but, like, I was asking him questions and he was responding to
me. Was he an older, chubby guy?
Yeah.
It was probably the owner.
Okay, well, I don't want to talk shit about the store yeah. necessarily, but, like... the reason we don't, or I haven't been, other than distance, mm-hmm. is that, you know, my wife was asking him questions about another thing that they stock,
yeah.
and rather than responding to her, he would look at me, like, pointedly look at me and answer her question.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's super rude. yeah, I was just surprised to see how much space they had, because they have...
Must be cheap.
Yeah, I guess. They had a lot of space for miniature games. There's a new miniature game that just came out. I'm not sure if you know.
Legion?
What?
Legion?
Yes, Star Legion. Wars one? Yes.
Yeah, the infantry. Yeah.
It's a Fantasy Flight game. And Fantasy Flight has put out a lot of interesting miniature games. They put out X-Wing, which is sort of like a dogfight. But those particular miniatures are pre-painted and pre-assembled.
Yeah.
With Legion, it's, I guess, to compete with the Warhammer 40K. The miniatures still are put together, so there's no gluing required.
Yeah.
But they come as just gray. So, yeah, you do have to paint them. And I guess painting stormtroopers is a bitch. Because getting, like, pure white is really hard.
Yeah, I mean... I kind of like, I feel like the primo bucks that Fantasy Flight charges for all of their stuff,
yeah.
I would expect them to go ahead and pre-paint everything, because they yeah. charge a lot for their pieces.
They do. I was looking at some of the prices, and it was expensive. Again, I've had my hits with miniature games, particularly Warhammer 40K and
War Machine?
War Machine, that's it. So many wars. I can't keep track of all the wars. but yeah, I've had my hits with them, and I'm just not a big fan of miniature games. It's
too much investment for it is. Too little return.
Yeah. But anyway, going back to the story, so... I was surprised to see Challenger there. I was surprised to see what they were stocking, because it wasn't so much like game stuff. Like, they had clothes, like, I guess.
Oh yeah, they have underwear, yeah. T-shirt,
I guess,
socks. Yeah. I think is another thing. It's odd. Yeah.
And I guess as a game store, you do have to kind of diversify
right.
your inventory, because you just want to get anyone in there to yeah. like, you know, buy stuff. But yeah, it was interesting. But anyway, back to the movie. The movie was good. So it's in that theater.
Okay.
And the theater is kind of a shitty theater, unfortunately. But super cheap tickets. That's why I went. $6 tickets.
Yeah, no, that's yeah. why we went to see this there.
I was going to buy a popcorn, like a small popcorn. Popcorn, $7. Popcorn is more than your movie ticket.
Yeah.
So I was surprised. But... as you can kind of guess from the title of the movie, there's not much dialogue. So I'm sitting in the theater, and other people are sitting there too. It actually was about 50% full. And about 5 minutes in, I hear somebody yell out, "Oh man, there's going to be no dialogue in this movie. I ain't watching this." And the dude gets up and leaves. I was like, what do you expect? Fact from this movie
that's
called The Quiet Place.
Well, that's like when we were seeing Sweeney Todd in theaters. You know, yeah. Sweeney Todd is an opera,
yeah.
right?
It's a musical.
Well, yeah, but well, so people are singing the entire time.
Yeah.
When we were watching it in Tampa when it was in theaters, these guys in front of us. Or this guy and this woman were in front of us, and the guy turns to his partner, his girlfriend, wife, whatever.
Yeah.
like 5 minutes into the movie and he goes, they're not going to sing this entire time, are they? And I was just like, oh, dude. Oh, dude.
You do not know what you're strapped in for. Yeah.
But I did have a question about that movie. Mm-hmm. Because in the trailers, you see them do a lot of ALS.
Yes.
Or ASL, rather. Not ALS. That's something else. But, yeah, a lot of sign language.
Mm-hmm.
Do they have subtitles in it? Or do you they get do. It from... Okay.
They do have subtitles. Because
the trailer doesn't. And I was like... That would be a really ballsy move for them to just make you pick it up from context.
Just be like, well, yeah. No, they actually have subtitles. And the movie is very suspenseful. So it's in that, like, horror genre of not, like, there's not a lot of jump scares. There's not a lot of gore. It's
more psychological.
It's all, yeah, just, you know, without having that dialogue, it heavily relies on music.
Gotcha.
So there's a score in it. And even the music, though, it's not the typical horror music where it'll pick up as, like, something intense is happening.
Yeah.
It's a very mellow, like, sound track, and it really plays well with that movie. I do enjoy it. I would probably say don't go and watch in theaters unless you have, like, a theater by yourself. Because, again, it's the majority of the movie is silent.
Yeah.
So you get a lot of, like...
crunching of popcorn.
Or people talking and things along those lines.
That looks like a type of movie that, yeah, I would prefer to watch at home.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I feel like it loses some of its ambiance in a movie theater with people who don't really expect what they are going to see. Because there were just, like, some people talking and things along those lines, it really pulls you out of the movie. But other than that, the acting was great, especially when you have to heavily rely on body language and expression. The monster design, it's not like a Cloverfield thing where you get to, like, see the monster for a split second. You actually get...
Oh, you do see them.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And it's a very interesting design. I think it's cool. And other than that, not to dive super deep into it, I would recommend it. But again, I would recommend it maybe like watching it at home just because you can sort of set that environment to get the full experience from it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I saw that movie actually yesterday.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, I saw a couple movies recently.
Oh, okay.
I saw Annihilation.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this is a while ago. But Annihilation, I highly recommend people seeing it.
Yeah, it's Natalie Portman?
No. Yeah, Natalie Portman is in that, weirdly, because I would not... If it were me in the producer seat, I would not have cast Natalie Portman.
Huh.
She's not at all who I... envision the character as.
But she does a good performance.
Yeah, she does. Like, all the actors do a great job in this movie.
Tangent, sorry. Have you seen the new Natalie Portman rap?
The follow-up?
Yeah.
For
the SNL?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I have not.
You should watch it. Well, after this, I'll show it to you. It's hilarious.
Okay.
Because it's like, I don't know, 5 or 10 years after she does it. Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, so.
With Annihilation, I know I left the movie theater. It was not what I expected in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, I read the books that they're based on.
Oh, I didn't even know that they were based on books.
Yeah, yeah. So Jeff Vandermeer wrote, it's actually a trilogy of books. So Annihilation is the first one. Sadly, I don't think this movie is getting a sequel.
Did they set it up for a sequel? Like...
kind of, like, they closed the story enough that it would make sense standalone.
Okay.
But there's definitely room still for a sequel.
There's a couple loose ends.
Because, yeah, like, in the book series, not to spoil it, but I guess the character in the first book does not return for the second, but it still has something to do with the area. So the point of the movie is that somewhere in the Pacific Northwest, I believe in the Pacific Northwest,
yeah.
This portal opens that closes off people from being able to get into this area
okay.
safely,
yeah.
right? weird time distortion things. Mm-hmm. And so teams of scientists just keep getting sent in. It's part of a trilogy called the Southern Reach Trilogy, and the Southern Reach is the agency that, like, is set up to deal with this weird alien thing that's happening on our world.
Interesting, yeah.
But, like, teams of scientists will go in and not come back, or they'll just, like, show up randomly in another spot in the world, like, 8 months later, and have no idea where they were.
Wow.
Yeah.
It sounds
very
interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's very trippy, but, like, they're not going to do a sequel, I don't think, because this movie was shot for $55 million.
Yeah.
It made 31 and a half back. It's...
That's rough.
And I was looking, it's weird. There's a wide swing between Rotten Tomatoes and CinemaScore on mm-hmm. it.
Well, and people
I agree with both of them.
No.
Because, so Rotten Tomatoes is 88%. CinemaScore is C, right?
Hmm.
So if you go into the movie expecting one thing and leaving with another, I can see the CinemaScore being low for that.
Yeah.
But if you go home and think about the movie for a little bit, I think your opinion of it is much higher, which makes sense why the Rotten Tomatoes is higher.
Yeah, because people have time to digest it before.
Yeah, it's very... It's also very psychological. It's like an old school sci-fi movie from, like, it's kind of like 2001.
Yeah.
Like, there, towards the end, there are scenes in there that I would argue are almost straight pulled from 2001.
Interesting. Yeah. So I hear that the special effects were really cool. Like, some of the things that they did in the anomaly were interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So there were a lot, like, part of me thinks that $55 million was too much to budget this movie for, but I can see that how it went to the CG, because the CG in it is very good.
Yes, yeah, somebody who also saw it was describing a bear, and...
Yeah.
It sounded cool.
Yes, no, the bear is very cool. Some of the weirder things in it, because in the movie, it's a biological, kind of quantum alien biological response.
Yeah.
And so the plant life is mixing up with certain genomes from people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know if you've seen the preview or not, where there's just this, like, it looks like people made out of plants. And they're not moving. And it's not because they're people that were turned into plants. It's plants that are using human DNA, and they're turned
people.
They're structurally, because they have that genome in them. They like start developing a skeletal structure. They don't move or anything. They're just, but that's what they look like when they flower.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
It looks like people. So it's a weird sci-fi movie. Mm-hmm. I really recommend it to anyone.
Nice. Where'd you go and see it at?
I just saw it at the AMC.
Oh, okay.
At the Road.
Yeah.
And then we also saw Thoroughbreds.
Thoroughbreds. I have not heard of that. Is that an independent movie, or?
Yes. Like, it... So it unveiled at Sundance in 2017, and then it came out here, like, nationwide, mm-hmm. I guess. I really like it. It's a very slow burn of a movie. Hmm. It's kind of like, if I had to describe it, it would be Heathers meets American Psycho as directed by Alfred Hitchcock.
Oh, so it's horror.
Not thriller. Really. Thriller is probably a better description. Okay. It's about two girls who were friends, but as they've gotten older, they've drifted apart. One of them is a tutor to a girl that has had a kind of a psychotic episode.
Yeah.
And who is pretty boldfacedly a sociopath.
Nah.
Like, she's upfront with, like, I don't know how other people
how other people
react.
Think. Yeah. God.
And
we had a friend who had to practice.
Had to practice smiling. Yeah, that's common in sociopathic people.
Yeah.
I forget the list of other attributes, but like there's like 10 or so attributes, and I want to say like he exhibited like 7 of them.
Yeah. Like, and then he was still like, I'm not a psychopath. It's like, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not are. Psychopath, sociopath.
Sociopath. Yeah,
psychopath
sorry.
Is,
yeah.
I think there are hallucinations involved and stuff like that. I'm not a doctor.
Neither am I. I'm far from a doctor.
But no, so Thoroughbreds is interesting because it focuses on these girls at a kind of a higher class private school in New England. And it's one of the girls wants to commit a murder, and it's murder. Not who you would expect. Other girl is kind of like coaching her through it because she's a sociopath. it's a much better movie than my glib glossing over it
glib?
Would imply.
Really glib?
Yeah, glib. I recommend it. If you see it in the video store or at a Redbox, maybe. I don't know if you get a Redbox.
Did you watch it at home?
No.
Oh.
No, we went to the same AMC.
Oh, okay. Wow. That AMC must show a lot of, like, independent sort of...
Yeah, I mean, it was only in theaters for, like, a week.
Okay.
So, I don't know what the rent on having it in that many theaters at the same time is.
Yeah.
But,
Well, yeah. I just know that we have a couple of, like, I guess independent theaters here in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Like the Plaza, the Terra.
I love the Plaza.
Yeah. Things along those lines. Or it's good to see big name theaters like AMC start putting out or just start having independent movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I like seeing the independent movies in larger venues because I think they need that widespread release because not everyone has an art like we didn't have an artsy theater growing up in the town that I'm from.
Yeah, I mean Atlanta being such a big metropolis will definitely have these things, but like if you go out, you know, in the Hicks,
South Carolina,
you're not going to have those theaters. Yeah. So it's good to see like the big AMCs putting out independent, or not putting them out, but showing independent movies.
Yeah.
So, it's progressive.
Oh, yeah.
So those were the only two movies that you
saw? Yeah, those were the only two movies that I saw Annihilation and Thoroughbreds. They're both very, very good.
Yeah.
People should watch them on Netflix or Amazon Prime or however they come out.
Yeah.
They're really, really just phenomenally directed, acted, written, very solid.
Good. So another thing that I did over this weekend was a new magic set came out, Dominarius. And I went to
physical.
Yeah. Okay. Well, they release them simultaneously.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. So what Wizards of the Coast does is a week before they officially get released in stores, they'll do a pre-release.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll do a physical pre-release where you can go to your game store or wherever. Well, not wherever. Really, just your game store and play it with physical cards. Or you can go on their, their servers, their Magic Online, and play it digitally. Either or.
Yeah.
And on Magic Online, it's up for about a week, so you don't really have, you know, you can join whenever, and it's a sealed. This pre-release is always a sealed event.
Yeah.
So you can do it either way. I actually went to a store and played, and I've been looking forward to this set. So I have an off-on relationship with Magic. There have been some sets where I've really digged it, and I'm in there. Usually I will play a limited event, being sealed or draft. I'm not big into the constructed events, which is standard, where you have a certain amount of cards that you can build from, usually like 3 blocks, and the blocks or the particular sets that come out.
It's the three newest sets.
It's the three newest sets, yeah. And then there's also Modern, which they have all the way back until a particular set, and you can use any of those cards. It's a bigger card pool, so there's more cards to get. But depending on the print release of a particular card, it could be really expensive.
Yeah.
Anyway, I stay away from those because that's where you get a lot of people who spend a lot of money on their deck, and they really want to win, so they're doing real try-hard stuff, and it's just not for me. So Limited is a lot more relaxed, especially at these pre-releases, because it's the first time that you're seeing these cards, so not everybody has a good understanding of what card's good or what card's bad, and the particular game store I went to, it was the biggest pre-release that they had, which is great. Yeah, it shows how well that this set came out, or how well the set was. It's a set that refers back to some of the older set. It goes back to the main plane of Dominarius.
That was the original plane?
It was the original plane.
Really?
Yeah, so in Magic lore...
Yeah, no, share with
Magic
me
because, lore.
Because no, I, well, that's the thing that fascinates me about the games like that is the lore around them, because it's a card game.
It's a card game,
it's
but
odd,
each block has its own story to it.
Yeah.
So the premise is you're a planeswalker, and you can jump from plane to plane to plane, and they have planeswalkers now as cards. And there's the main five, the Oath of the Gatewatch, which is Shanra, she's your red mage, Jace, who is the blue mage.
Jace Bellerin, right?
Jace Bellerin.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, he's pretty much like the poster child of Magic.
It's the only reason I know it, because I haven't played Magic since high school.
Yeah.
So,
so Jace Bellerin, you got Liliana Vess, she's your black planeswalker.
Yeah.
You've got Garen. Garen? It's G. I don't know. he's the white guy. He's the white planeswalker. And then you have Nissa, who is the green planeswalker.
Okay.
Yeah. Originally, when planeswalkers were introduced as actual cards that you could play with, was in Lorwyn. And the green planeswalker was actually Garrett. Garrett. Gee, names, man.
Garrett?
No, because Garrett is the guy from The Witcher. Or Jarrett.
That's...
Geralt?
No, Geralt.
Oh. Huh.
Okay.
Anyway. So, he was a green planeswalker, but stuff happened in the lore, and Nissa became... Anyway.
The things that happened in the lore, is this when they were doing the fusion sets? Because that was the last set I played, where you could have a card that was like... two reds and a green to cast it, like to tap it.
That was Invasion, when they did multicolored cards.
Yeah.
That was a long time ago.
is that where it happened in the storyline, or is this the most recent storyline?
No, that happened in Lorwyn, and that was quite a while ago.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, so before all these sets came out, the main plane that, like, the center of the universe, basically.
Yeah.
Because you can jump from different planes to different planes, and there's different environments and things along those lines.
Right.
But, like, the center plane is Dominarius.
Okay.
And that's where the beginning of the Magic lore started, was in Dominarius. You had Urza. Urza was the big...
Oh, yeah, Urza.
Big,
yeah.
Yeah, he had got his own block of, like, Urza's... Legacy, Mercadian Mask, and some... Anyway, he was a big guy. He was a big guy.
Yeah.
And planeswalkers were super powerful.
Yeah.
And they could... They were like demigods. They didn't die. They had a lot of power. So, what happened there was the planes started becoming unstable because... I forget the main evil guy, but Phyrexian were these, like, monsters.
Yeah.
And they were trying to shift that plane into Dominarius. And fractures started happening. So the Great Mending happened. I believe Urza was a big part of that. Where he mended the planes, but during the mending, it took away a lot of planeswalkers' powers.
Oh.
Like, they're still powerful,
yeah.
but they're not, like, omni-powerful as what they used to be.
Yeah.
So now, the main villain of the Gatewatch is Nicol Bolas. I don't know if... He's an Elder Dragon.
Okay.
And he's been, I believe, trying to undo the mending.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's... Why?
Because he wants his original planeswalker's ability back. Because he's a planeswalker.
Okay. He's a plane. Oh, right. It's not just human mages that are planeswalkers.
Yeah, they can be elder dragons. And Nicol Bolas has been living for many of eons, and he was living before the mending had happened. So he had all this power.
Yeah.
Urza came and basically stripped all that power from him to mend the planes to help the different planes. And now he has been on a mission to try to undo the mending and become his powerful self again.
So is Urza still part of the story?
No, Urza's dead.
Oh.
He died during the set. I believe he died during the mending. Like, it took so much power.
It took, like, his life force. Yeah. Or yeah.
And again, this is the super quick abridged version of it.
Well, so I have a question.
There are books, there are stories, there are lore. You can, because the books will cover an entire block, yeah.
Okay.
But then the cards themselves have flavor text on the bottom of the cards, which, you know, doesn't really deal with any of the rules on the card. But you can learn a lot on flavor text. They just start... Magic has just started recently identifying particular cards as story cards. So they'll have, 10 story cards in a set. And that flavor text is very important to the story. It's a card that is a very pivotal moment of that story. It could be, Urza's downfall, or something along those lines. And then the picture will depict that important scene.
So, other than the books, and I guess the comics, I think, doesn't IDW put out the comics?
They, I don't know if they still do. Jace got his own comic.
Yeah.
But I'm not 100% sure if they're still producing them.
Okay, well, so is there, I'm assuming there's a magic Wikipedia that Wizards of the Coast manages so that you can...
I'm not sure if Wizards of the Coast manages it. I think it's probably, fan-based.
Fan thing?
Yeah. But, yeah, there's definitely a website that you can go to and actually look at these particular lores. Because Wizards of the Coast, on their website, they have articles, and I believe every Thursday they come out with a lore article of, this is a particular person in this setting.
Yeah, they do the same thing for D&D on the D&D podcast.
Yeah. So they set it up really well, but Dominarius is... So it has so much nostalgia in it.
Yeah.
People,
do they have the painting of, the Sarah Angels? Because I remember that...
They actually have Sarah Angels.
Oh, nice.
Sarah Angel is a card. She is not a rare anymore. She is a uncommon, which kind of shows you kind of the power creep of magic. Where back in the day, a 4/4 flying vigilant...
Oh, that was the shit.
That would... For 5 mana? Yeah, that was great.
Yeah.
But nowadays, it's not as powerful as it used to be.
Yeah.
Angels, they have a big thing with, there's a little bit of tribal synergy where there are different creature types in magic. And there's an angel tribal theory, or not theory, a tribal thing. They brought back goblins. Goblins are kind of a thing now, yeah. Wizards, because Talarian Academy was an academy in Dominarius. where all of the, like, high-level mages trained.
Huh, okay.
The thing was that they had a temporal spell on it.
Yeah.
So the academy kept on disappearing and reappearing in different places on Dominaria.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's like, pulled from Dragonlance, but that's a cool...
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. I believe one of Urza's students went there. It's a famous card, too. It's a pretty powerful card. It is a land that will tap for blue mana, but it'll produce blue mana for, or one blue mana for each artifact that you have. Oh. So it can
so you
get.
You can chain that really quickly.
Well, yeah, if you have a bunch of artifacts and you tap it, then you get like, you know, 10 blue mana and you cast your crazy spell. But,
I hate blue decks.
Permission decks, yeah. But the pre-release was a lot of fun. Again, there were a lot of people there. It was the biggest turnout that they had. 110 people. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
And I went to the midnight release on Friday. Okay. So, it was late. And we got the pool of, we being me and my sister's boyfriend, actually. My sister and her boyfriend came into town from California, and he's also a big Magic player. So we went.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he enjoys Magic. So this was the first time that I ever met him. So we decided to go and chill and play some Magic together.
Cool.
And again, there were a lot of people there. Just, you get a lot of friendly people there because it's not a big tournament. It's not like you're trying to win a bunch of prizes. The prize support is very small. And the, like, pro points, I don't even think you really get any pro points. But, so, there's a lot of friendly people there, and it's very casual. And, unfortunately, both him and me didn't get that great at pools.
Mm.
So, we were playing, and it's four rounds. Again, with them, with so many people being there, the rounds were taking a long time. It ended up being about 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
And we were only on round two. Yeah. So we kind of looked at each other and we're like, oh man, we're super tired. I can't concentrate. I've been making horrible plays. And we decided just to book it after that. So I'm really looking forward to actually doing some draft. Draft is kind of my forte.
Your jam?
My jam. But again, since it's a pre-release, they can't actually sell physical cards yet because it's not on on the market yet.
You're paying for things you can't take with you.
No, you can take the pack. So with a pre-release, they give you a pre-release kit, which is 6 booster packs.
Okay.
And then you make your deck out of those 6 booster packs.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just you can't go up to the counter and be like, oh, can I buy 20 more additional packs, or can I get a box of cards?
Okay.
They won't sell them. You're just buying in for the event, and they're giving you the cards that you make your deck with.
So, quick question then. How much... I remember booster packs used to be $3.
Yes.
A pack. And boxes used to be, like, 80?
Okay.
How much are they now? How much is that?
$3.99 for a booster pack.
Okay.
I'm not 100% sure on a booster box. I think maybe 100, but I'm not sure.
So it hasn't, like, it's kept up with inflation.
It has. And that's just regular sets. They come out with these Modern Master sets where there are a lot of, like, cards that are really good for Modern or Iconic Masters. These are cards that were iconic in Magic lore. And those booster packs are $10. $10 for a booster pack. It's kind of ridiculous, yeah. But you're supposed to get, like, really good cards. But some people argue, well, they aren't really good cards. They need to reprint stuff. It's, you get into, like, Magic investing or Magic, like, because there's a lot of people who buy boxes and sit on them and wait for them to inflate after they stop printing those particular boxes. And you can make money. So it's a whole economy with Magic cards, and it's really interesting, but I highly don't recommend people actually get into the vesting game through Magic cards.
Yeah, that does not seem like a very good choice.
Yeah. But yeah, a lot of fun. I think the set is great. The artwork is top-notch.
Hmm.
They have these new cards called Sagas, which are enchantments.
Okay.
And the art is actually horizontal, sort of like a tapestry.
Oh, okay.
And the card text is also horizontal, but it's a tapestry of, like, famous events in Magic history.
Huh.
Yeah. So they actually have, one of the cards is the Binding of Dominarius, which, you know, kind of like, this was an important event in Magic history. So it's really cool. I enjoy the little that I played. Probably didn't enjoy it too much because it was like midnight and I was super sleepy and I was making a bunch of mistakes. But I'll definitely jump online and play me some Magic when it comes out in draft.
Yeah, I another quick thing on Magic is I want to know if is it just one person that comes up with the lore for these cards?
And no.
If so, does it look like
they have
be like okay, so the planes are going to break and our most popular player or PC or character is he's going to die in this event and there's going to be this giant fucking dragon, right?
Yeah.
And then the game designers have to take this crazy hermit just rambling and go, okay, how do we design cards around this? And the artists have to go, okay, what does this look like?
Yeah. No, so the way that they make these sets, they have a lead designer. The lead designer has a team under him,
yeah.
The R&D who test and make sure that the mechanics are fun,
yeah,
and interesting. Oh, I'm not sure. Yeah, if you played in Invasion, Kicker is back, where you can pay extra mana to do a...
Yeah.
So they brought that back. So they'll bring back mechanics, but then they'll try to create new mechanics.
And does the lead designer change frequently, like between sets?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. They
so it's
do
not like
out.
A person where it's like I've been the lead designer of Magic for like six sets.
Well, for the sets, there is the lead designer of R&D who was Richard Garfield at first, the guy who created Magic.
Yeah, we created it. Yeah.
Mark Rosewater is now the head of R&D. Okay. So, really, he gets, like, final say if, like, this doesn't work. But usually it'll be the designer who's making the main decisions.
Gotcha.
Stuff like that.
And do you know if Richard Garfield still gets a royalty for the game, or did he sell it to Wizards for just a flat fee? Because he was, like, a grad student when he sold that.
I'm not sure, because Wizards of the Coast is actually owned by Hasbro.
Yeah.
Maybe when they were a independent company, he might have gone. But with Hasbro buying them out, I'm not 100% sure.
Okay.
I would have to do some research on that.
Because you realize that when he was getting his PhD...
Mm-hmm.
The kernel for Magic, supposedly, was his dissertation.
Yeah.
It was 30 pages, and he sat with his advisors and played an alpha version of that. That's how
amazing.
He got his PhD.
Yeah, it's amazing. And he actually still goes around to colleges and teach game theory. He teaches it.
Oh, he's written a book. It's been on my wish list forever because it's an academic book.
And he's still creating games, too.
It's like $70.
Like,
it's,
you have King of Tokyo. He created that game.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's still very active. I don't think, because people have asked him, like in interviews, about Magic, about the state of Magic, because Magic can be very polarizing. There are a lot of people who are, like, on the side of Magic sucks now. We need to go back to the old days of Magic where there were, like, better arts, better design, things along those lines.
So, like, WoW.
Yeah, like, WoW. It's like, WoW. And then some people were like, this, no, we're Magic's very innovative.
Yeah.
Magic is doing new things. Of course, when you do new things, there are going to be a couple failures. So, yeah, it's very, you get very polarizing opinions on Magic. I enjoy it. Again, you know, if I don't like a set, I'm probably not going to play it. If I do like a set, I'll probably play it a bit. So, from what I've seen of Dominarius, I do like it. So.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was Friday night. Gosh, it was a long Friday night. I feel bad for my sister's boyfriend, Bob, because he had to go to, my sister was in town for a wedding reception, or not wedding reception, a wedding. I picked him up at the wedding reception on Friday.
Gotcha.
And then we ended up staying up playing Magic until 4 a.m.
That sounds like an awesome way to bond with your sister's
boyfriend. Yeah, no, and we got to see him, we got to talk, and he's really a cool guy. He's got his fingers in a lot of pies. A lot of dorky pies. Dork pies.
I love dorky pies.
Dorks.
Okay.
You can edit that out.
Maybe. Maybe I'll keep that in. So I read a book, Jason Schreier's Blood, Sweat, and Pixels. It's basically about how difficult it is to design games. It covers a wide swath of games. Like, it starts off with Pillars of Eternity, Uncharted 4, Ooh. Stardew Valley, Diablo 3, Halo Wars, wow. Dragon Age Inquisition, Shovel Knight, Destiny, Witcher 3, and then Star Wars 1313. Star Wars 1313 was included because it got canceled.
Oh.
And that's after, like, 3 and 4 years of people doing
yeah.
work on it, and it just gets canceled.
Yeah, you've got to feel crushed when that happens.
Yeah, but like if you notice, like Stardew Valley is a game that one guy did.
Yeah, it was an indie game, and the guy was heavily influenced from Harvest Moon. Yeah. But there's actually some combat in Stardew Valley. That Valley.
Yeah. Well, and he it covers small independent. Games like
yeah,
that?
Because Shovel Knight was
Shovel Knight as well.
Yeah, yeah, because Shovel Knight is an homage to Mega Man.
Yeah, but it also covers big AAA games like Halo Wars and Dragon Age Inquisition.
And Witcher.
Which, the crunch time, what the fuck is wrong with that industry? I mean, like...
Because you have particular dates that you have to hit. You have, like, the market of, it's almost Christmas... We need to hit that particular dates.
Yeah.
And then a lot of them don't want to compete. You don't want Witcher coming out when another big name is dropping,
no,
too.
No, and I get that, but, like, I just, and, you know, they even say in the book, it's not uncommon for people who work on the games, as soon as it releases, maybe a few weeks or so afterwards, for them to take, like, a 2 or 3 month sabbatical. Like, it's just standard in the industry, because it's like...
You worked 12, 14-hour days?
More like 18-hour days during crunch time, according to this, for Jeez. Like 2 and 3 months. That's completely understandable.
Yeah.
It's mind-boggling to me the people that keep up with that and do that.
Yeah.
Because that, like, it's... That's a lot of friggin' hours. The book is amazing. If you've ever wondered what it takes to have a team develop a game.
Yeah, I actually would like to borrow that book from you after I'm done
with
reading
Eaters of the Dead, and we can record a book club episode. Yeah.
Because all those games sound really interesting. And I know that the crunch time is a big deal. Because...
Yeah.
Every day that your game is not out is money that you're losing.
Exactly.
And money that you're spending.
Yeah. Well, I'm surprised how many iterations some games go through. Like, Uncharted 4 had 3 different, like, big iterations that it was supposed to look like before the final one came out.
Wow.
And that's insane.
Yeah. And then particular games with features that you don't really think should be features... Like, BioShock 2. BioShock 2 had a multiplayer option where you would fight each other. Yeah, in BioShock.
Yeah, that's like BioShock 2 could have been DLC.
Yeah, well, and the thing was, so BioShock was made by a particular company, and then they outsourced the multiplayer.
Yeah.
So it wasn't even the same company that was making this. It feels like a mashing of two separate things.
So dumb.
Yeah, and it just doesn't.
Well, I don't understand why Uncharted has a multiplayer. Like, yeah. That just seems dumb.
Because I assume it was the fad of the day. Like, yeah. Right now, the fad of the day is
Battle Royale.
Battle Royale, yeah. Where a lot of people are trying to make Battle Royale. Because
PUBG and Fortnite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Far Cry, the newest Far Cry, mm-hmm. Far Cry 5, came out. And there are rumors of them trying to do a Battle Royale with Far Cry. By taking...
Oh, I did see that.
Yeah, yeah. By taking, like, the assets and just creating just a Battle Royale. Because that's the thing. People love shooting each other and killing each other until one person stands strong.
That just... I don't understand the draw of PUBG.
Especially since it's so buggy. Like,
yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah. Because for the longest time, it was in early access. And you can kind of forgive some of, like, the bugs that it had.
Yeah.
Well, it recently... Well, not recently. It released, and it still has some of those bugs, and they're now trying to make it into, like, a pro-gamer scene, where they're running tournaments.
On a buggy, glitchy game?
Yeah. So you can understand how that's going. But yeah, the book sounds... Like, what was one of your... favorite facts or like something that surprised you?
Something that surprised, I had no idea Stardew Valley was a one dude team.
Oh, yeah.
And that he, luckily his girlfriend like supported him by working two jobs so he could do nothing but make this game over the course
of 3 years. It wasn't Kickstarter or anything?
Mm-mm. Because it was before Kickstarter, I believe.
Okay.
He may have run a Kickstarter for it. At some point to kind of make up extra funds, but I don't know.
Because I know that Shovel Knight was kickstarted.
Yes, Shovel Knight was kickstarted.
Yeah.
Stardew Valley was not. He just funded that on his own stuff.
God, that takes balls of steel, because if that fails... Yeah. And you're just shit out of luck.
Well, he thought it would take him 6 months, and it took, like, 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
Like,
well, there's a lot of content in that game.
Yeah.
Where there's a whole area of you romancing particular NPCs, and yeah. you fighting things. It's yeah. not just...
Well, Harvest realistically, Moon. I think he could have gotten it out in 6 months, maybe a year.
Mm.
Because he even said himself that he's a perfectionist. So, like, he would spend hours working on the pixels for a character's hair and then erase it and start over.
Oh, wow.
So, like, it's a lot of backtracking.
Yeah.
We also went to see Kayflay in concert.
Oh, okay. I don't know.
You don't know who Kayflay is? She's a rapper?
No.
No? Okay. So Kayflay does rap. I'll probably put in some music at the beginning and the end of this from her, so you can get a flavor of her music. It was at the Variety Playhouse. Tickets were like $20-$30 a ticket.
Not bad.
She sold it out, and I wouldn't be surprised if... Because I think she either won or was nominated for a Grammy.
Oh, okay.
I wouldn't be surprised if she's playing the next level up in venues. Like, not stadiums, but like... Tabernacle.
Yeah.
Size venues. Because the Variety Playhouse is where we saw her.
And it's fairly small, I mean.
Yeah, it's a small club, I would say. Small theater, maybe.
Yeah.
And it was fantastic. Like, her openers were this band from England called Youngblood.
Hmm.
Y-U-N-G-B-L-U-D. They had a weird 50s feel.
Oh, like, really? I wouldn't have expected that from that name.
It, very punk.
Okay, yeah.
And very loud. Like, there was a drummer, a guitar player, and then a singer. And the singer was doing these, like, Mick Jagger-ish type moves.
Oh, all right.
But he was wearing, like, brothel creepers and, like, really high pants. Huh. And so, like, it looked like a 50s, like... Rock, not rockabilly band. Yeah, rockabilly band. Like, he was doing, like, Elvis Presley-like moves, too.
That's cool.
Which is really weird looking, but
yeah.
I really like them.
Well, that's cool.
She was also here the same day as a march was going. I think she attended the march here for against gun violence.
Oh, yeah.
And so it was really interesting seeing signs posted in the lobby. And near the merch table that said 100% of the proceeds from the merch and from the ticket sales were going to this cause.
Wow, that is amazing. Yeah, that's
really nice because she sold out the venue.
I mean, and that's how a lot of these artists make their money is through concerts and stuff like that because they get shafted on record deals.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, you know, she performed in front of this big LED wall that, you know, probably cost at least a couple hundred grand.
Yeah, that's not cheap.
She had, it looked like 6 or 7 different roadies that were on stage, plus her touring band. Wow. Like, they're in buses, too. Like, being on the road is a huge expense, so it's amazing that she donated that much of, like, 100% of her merch sales to a charity.
Yeah, I mean, it shows how much people really care about this movement.
Yeah. Her set in the show was awesome. She was playing some stuff from earlier EPs, mainly a lot of stuff from her newest album, obviously.
Obviously. Yeah.
Now, I try to stay positive. The show was great. I hate the Atlanta music scene, though, because keep in mind, this isn't a sold-out show.
Yeah.
Everyone in there knows who she is.
Yeah.
In between songs, there was one dude that I guess he had drunk too much, or maybe he was just being a hipster douchebag.
Yeah.
But
it's hard to tell between the two.
He kept yelling out very loudly, "What the fuck's a kayflay, though?"
Mm.
And it's like, dude, like, you don't have to do that between every song. Like, if I can hear you and you're in the back, like, she can hear you. Because we were maybe 10 or so people from the front of the stage.
I'm surprised somebody didn't escort them out.
I mean, he's not being violent. He's just being obnoxious.
Yeah,
there's no law against being a dickhead.
If only. If only.
If only. But yeah, no, see kayflay in concert. She's awesome. She puts on a good show. Nice. And her openers are good.
How long have you listened to her? Like, is this somebody new that you just picked up? Or?
So actually my wife found her and showed me her video for Blood in the Cut.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really cool music video, and so it's been about a year, I guess, since her album came out around this time last year, I think. Maybe May or so.
So she has two albums? Or
she has a number, because like I said, she's a rapper, so she has like 3 or 4 EPs.
Oh, okay.
And then I think she has 2, maybe 3 albums. I think she has 2 major label albums and 1 like that she self-produced.
Okay.
But like she does all of, my understanding is that she does all of the instrumentation on the tracks, and it's just on the road that she has a band behind her.
Oh, that's cool.
Because she actually plays a little synth organ and a guitar every now and then on songs when they need an extra.
Oh, so voice. She was at playing some instruments.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So it's interesting to see rap performed not in front of a guy in front of a turntable.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see it performed with a band, because like, I like Rage Against the Machine too. What? I said it. I'm not going to hide it. I like Rage Against the Machine.
No one's pointing their fingers.
I like that.
But if you do
want
to send an email.
Yeah, if you want to send an email, send it to backrowsupershow@gmail.com.
Yeah. Tell Zach how
much you hate Rage Against the Machine, and I'll write back a nasty message.
No, you don't. We'll say thank you for writing to the podcast. Yeah. Actually.
So the last thing that I had, yes, at least, was that, so we have a friend that has the subscription channel to WWE wrestling.
Wrestling.
And so we went to watch WrestleMania 2018. Fuck, oh, yeah. It's the 34th WrestleMania.
Wow. Yeah.
So I don't follow wrestling. Like, I stopped watching it, like, in maybe in middle school.
I mean, it's a story, too. Yeah, like,
there's a huge story to it that I was just, like, it was, like, sitting down in the middle of the movie about the weirdest thing ever. And it's like, who's that? Why is he talking trash about this guy? And our friend was having to, like, do asides and go, okay, so he's the champion in the New Japan Pro Wrestle League, and he's trying to unseat this guy in this thing. It's like, okay, all right. I can follow it. So
he actually, this friend, follows Wrestle?
From what I understand, yeah. Like, because he was able, unless he keeps up with it. He like took a boot camp in it before WrestleMania, so yeah, he could kind of go, okay, so this is what's happening.
Well,
generally,
if he has a channel, I assume that he probably is
a
fan.
He probably watches it. Yeah. But so the title between the champions this year was Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar.
Brock Lesnar. He's the guy with the, like, those with the hand in front of the face.
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
I think that's The Miz. I don't know. I don't know.
Okay. apparently, Roman Reigns is a guy that the WWE has been trying to make a good guy or a face.
Yeah.
And no one buys it. No one likes him. Right?
He's just unsellable.
Yeah. The current champion is Brock Lesnar. Yeah. Now, I have a theory that something, because everyone makes the joke that no one gets hurt in wrestling, right?
Yeah, but people do get hurt.
People
in wrestling.
Do get hurt in wrestling. I have a feeling because our friend was telling us that Brock Lesnar was like, if I had to bet, I would put money on Brock Lesnar losing, because in real life, that guy is no longer going to be wrestling. He's going to UFC. Okay. Like, he signed his contract. He's out.
Yeah.
Right?
He's going to be punching and kicking.
He's going to be punching and kicking. Also, in the ads between matches, they were showing for WWE 2K18.
Yeah.
The guy on the cover of that video game is Roman Reigns. Right?
Yeah, and you don't want to put a loser on the cover.
You don't want to put a loser on your cover, right?
Yeah.
So what had happened in the match, the match only lasted about 10 minutes, which is kind of short for a championship match, because you want to draw that stuff out.
Yeah. That's where you're making your big views.
So Lesnar is quote unquote fake punching this guy by, like, grabbing his head and, like, it looks like he's punching him.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife noticed, hey, he's got blood on his hand, and our friend goes, there's no way that's happened, because he was saying earlier in the evening that, there's less blood in WrestleManias now because they're trying to make it a family thing, because if you can get them early, you got them forever.
Yeah,
right? So they're not going to put anything too graphic on there.
Yeah. Where is...
And he goes, no, that's not blood. He may have skinned his elbow or something. And then my wife goes, no, look. And so Roman Reigns has blood pouring down his face.
Oof.
And he's refusing to be pinned. Like, he keeps kicking out of whatever pin he's getting put in.
Yeah.
And our friend was like, I want to roll back on the tape when Lesnar pins him,
mm-hmm,
because pins Roman Reigns, because he's like, I want to see if the ref tells him he's concussed and he doesn't know where he is. You need to end this. Because Brock Lesnar is the champion, even though he's leaving the league. After the match with Roman Reigns walking up the ramp, finally the medical professionals got his head to stop bleeding. They probably super glued it.
Yeah.
Because, like, that's really the only way to get a head wound to stop. Like, if you...
And that's what super glue was for, was, mend actual cuts and things along those lines.
Yeah. He's walking back up the ramp, and the medical professionals are following behind him very closely. Not like for show, but like, and he starts to go in the wrong way up the ramp, and a handler has to point him in the right direction. It's like, he was supposed to win that match, and he didn't.
I wonder what happened. I wonder if it was just a slip hit, or if, you know, he was supposed to hold back, but he, you know, in the heat of the moment.
I don't think it was a slip. Well, so the thing leading up to that was that he got thrown out of the ring onto a table.
Uh-huh.
And I'm wondering if he didn't land right and maybe concussed himself, because the guy had to pick him up and kind of force him back into the ring.
But that's... Well, I haven't seen much wrestling, but
yeah.
I assume that's probably standard, where you just kind of force the guy back into the ring, but...
I mean, he was. It looked like he was forcing him because he couldn't get up and do it himself.
Oh, okay. Well, it'll be interesting to see what kind of spin they put on this.
Yeah, I'm wondering what happens next year.
Yeah, because you're champion. Maybe they'll just have to give him a lot of money, just be like, come back for this one time and...
This one match, and you'll lose your championship.
Yeah, so we can have the champion stay in our, you know, WWE.
Yeah. So that was fun. That was a fun way to hang out with friends and just be like, oh my God, what's going on?
Yeah.
Oh! So yeah, that was me. That was our time.
Cool. I mean,
got anything else?
That's pretty much it for me.
Okay.
All right.
So, we'll see you guys next week.
Yup. Again, if you want to write in, tell Zach how wrong he is, you can write in to...
Stuart at gmail.
No. Stop. I don't want those emails.
Stuart@gmail.co.uk.
I don't need none of those emails.
No. No, if you want to write into us, it's backrowsupershow@gmail.com.
Yep, backrowsupershow@gmail.com.
And if you want to, for some reason, give us money, patreon.com/backrowsupershow. Like our Facebook. It's facebook.com/backrowsupershow.
You can see a theme.
Yeah, you see a theme developing here.
Back Row Super Show.
Apple Podcasts.
We've got plenty of stuff up there.
I'm
sure there'll be plenty of more stuff coming up.
Oh, yeah. Depending on when this drops, I don't know what the episode would be.
Yeah.
Currently, the book club book is Eaters of the Dead by Michael Crichton.
Yes, I will finish
how
that.
How far are you in that?
You know, like page 5. It's going to happen.
The book is like 200 pages.
I know.
Just keep doing that.
Just keep on staying on page 5?
No, just keep on adding 5 pages. Like 5 pages a night.
Maybe. Yeah.
Okay.
I just can't come to this and be like, oh, I read the book for a book club. Oh, okay. You want to talk about it? No, because we're going to do a book club podcast. I got to do other things.
Yeah, exactly. We'll see you guys next week. Send us an email if you want.
Yeah, tell us how cool we are.
Alright, see you guys. Bye. Who you gonna trust when the killer is the cop?